It's Friday, March 5th. It's probably going to pass, but everyone's determined to make it as painful as possible until it does. We start here. The Senate will stay in session until a $1.9 trillion relief package gets a vote. Well, get comfortable.
They're also waiting to see what Republicans are actually going to try to claim some of this as their victory back home.
We're diving past the minutiae and into what you need to know about this bill. The blackouts were bigger in Texas, but a massive water crisis is unfolding next door.
Is it drinkable?
No.
How long does it take to turn the water back on in Mississippi? And they have nicer laundry than ours, but it's still dirty laundry.
The idea is don't complain, don't explain.
Why Buckingham Palace is investigating Meghan Markle and what else could be uncovered as a result. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
We're not seeing consistent numbers. Hit or miss, as like cases go up, we tend to see people not come as much.
Remember a year ago, when people really started taking COVID-19 seriously, there was this almost disbelief about how long you could tell people to socially distance.
According to Yelp's September Economic Impact Report, more than 32,000 restaurants have closed their doors since the pandemic began, 61% of them permanently.
Businesses were quickly looking at their books, asking, how long can we afford to shut down? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 1 month?
So we're laying off about 28 people. It was going to be a risk of losing more money trying to be open.
We are on the cusp of being able to fundamentally change the nature of this disease because of the way in which we're able to get vaccines in people's arms.
Well, a year later, the White House is pointing to a light at the end of this tunnel. By the end of May, they say, we should have enough vaccine doses for every adult in the country. So it's tempting to say, hey, just a couple months more, we're basically through this. To which business owners will say, are you crazy? Like, do you think we were just making this all up a year ago? That is still a really, really long time to be losing money. Some states want to solve this problem by lifting restrictions on some or even all aspects of life. This has not necessarily followed party lines or infection rates, for that matter. But for most Americans, the simplest way to get through the next few months safely is money. Government support.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50, the Senate being equally divided. The vice president votes in the affirmative, and the motion to proceed is agreed to.
And yesterday, in a party line vote, the Senate decided to start considering a $1.9 trillion relief package. But will it pass? When will it pass? And what does that mean for you? Let's go to ABC's Trish Turner, who's our lead producer on Capitol Hill. That means she knows way too much about Senate rules, Trish. what should we be expecting here? It's made its way from the House. Now what?
So what we are experiencing is Republicans were just really intent on showing the American people like what's in this bill. It came very late.
The objection is heard. The clerk will continue the reading.
As the American Rescue Act of 2021, Section 2, Table of Contents.
And so Republicans decided to require the clerks to read the bill.
Section 1103, Additional Funding for Nutrition Assistance Programs.
We haven't seen this in ages, so a trio of clerks, they've been alternating through the night. And at some point when they finish, we will see the Senate move to official debate. So 20 hours of debate is prescribed under this fast track procedure that they're using. And then after that, we get to this terrible thing called Votorama.
We should consider every amendment offered. Again, that's what Votorama is supposed to be.
It's amendment after amendment after amendment. But then after that, we should see final passage by late morning on Saturday. And then, of course, it has to go back to the House because the Senate has made changes before it can then go to President Biden's desk for his signature.
In the earlier bill, Nancy Pelosi put $100 million into building a subway just outside her district for Silicon Valley. Last night, she added another $40 million to that in Rules Committee.
Well, and it's interesting when we talk about the Votorama, Trish, because you'd think like, oh, each side's going to be adding in all these things. But it sounds like none of them are going to pass because Joe Biden essentially went to his own Democrats. It was like, listen, bridges and like pet projects and like defunding the police, like that's not in this bill. That's not it. Do not put that in the COVID bill because we don't want to give other people a chance to say, well, I'm not going to vote for it because of that stupid amendment. So if no Votorama items are actually going to be in the bill, like what's in the bill? What actually matters here that could conceivably pass?
I mean, it's you know, $1.9 trillion. You can imagine there's a ton of stuff in this bill.
Right.
You know, not to mention the $1,400 stimulus checks. That's really popular. They narrowed those a little bit. You'll get a check if you make up to about $75,000. You won't get anything after $80,000. And then just $400 a week in unemployment insurance. There's thousands in there for child tax credit. And then the big one that Democrats really wanted this time around, and they fought Republicans tooth and nail and constantly lost on, was this $350 billion pot of state and local money.
It's pretty frustrating to me that we would sit here and spend money like this when we've already paid the state revenues generally are about $1 trillion. We already gave them $400 billion.
Moderates really wanted some guardrails on that money, more of the money out of the hands of the governors and down to the localities. And so that was a fight that they won.
This is a dark time in Alaska right now. Sunsets about, I don't know, maybe about 3:45 in the afternoon.
And then what we're really looking for, Brad, is there is one Republican who has held out that she might just vote for this, and that's Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski.
They need to get from now, from here to there.
There's a lot in this bill that's attractive for her. There's tourism money for her tourism industry in her state. She has openly told us, I'm talking to anyone who will listen. This is what my state needs. And they've been listening. So it'll be interesting to see what she does.
And that was kind of my last question for you, because it seems like nearly everything about this bill has become a 50-50 thing, right? It was billed
That's
as
right.
like, we're gonna make this bipartisan. That's not what's happening. But at times I wonder, is each side secretly okay with that? Like, is
yep.
Joe Biden secretly like, sure, like, go ahead, don't vote for the biggest relief package in history. Like, good luck with that. What are the dynamics here?
That's exactly right. So Democrats think so it breaks down to the politics, right?
Each piece isn't just defensible, it is urgent and overwhelmingly supported by the people. It's good policy and it's good politics.
Democrats think they are on the right side of this argument. They say the polls are bearing this out. Even Republicans in the polls want this aid back to their states.
That's literally true. If you send John and the Reverend to Washington, those $2,000 checks will go out the door, restoring hope and decency and honor for so many people who are struggling right now.
They think they saw this bear fruit in the Georgia Senate elections, and they want to go right back to the American people with the same argument. And they're also waiting to see what Republicans are actually going to try to claim some of this as their victory back home.
But look, the real tragedy here is not Senate process. It's how ill-suited this bill is to what Americans need right now.
Flip side of that, Republicans, I mean, after years of spending under Donald Trump, they have found, religion again on deficit.
It's actually hard to spend this much money.
They are really concerned about this price tag, that we're already coming out of the dark days and there's no need to spend this kind of money.
Much of the legislation that we're asked to vote on is not going to be spent this year. No one thinks a year from now we'll be in this COVID crisis we're in now.
And there are actually some Democratic economists who believe that this bill is not structured properly. And so Republicans want to be able to say, I told you so at the polls. And so they're all, just waiting to see how this pans out in the next 6 months or so.
All right, Trish Turner, keeping track of it. We'll talk to you over the weekend, I'm sure, Trish, when this finally passes. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
The electricity was out for days, but the consequences could last a lot longer.
The company that manages 90% of the energy grid in Texas under fire after massive blackouts during last week's vicious winter storm.
This week, the CEO of that group that controls the energy grid for Texas was fired, but the problems have not just been limited to Texas.
To the urgent water crisis in Mississippi, many residents of Jackson have been without water for more than 2 weeks since that historic storm ripped through the South.
In fact, there are big parts of Mississippi's largest city that are still without running water. And ABC's Victor Oquendo is on the ground there trying to get some answers. Victor, where are you and how bad is it there?
Brad, I am in Jackson, Mississippi, and thankfully, things are getting a little better, but it has been a mess for more than 2 weeks now.
Is your house without water right now?
It's going.
You're getting a little bit of water,
yeah.
like a slow drip?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it drinkable?
No.
We are talking about 16 to 17 days for some people. They haven't had running water at all.
So we're having to go somewhere else to bathe.
No way to take a shower, brush your teeth, flush your toilets. It has been a mess here.
So how many times have you been in a line like this waiting for water?
About 4th or 5th time.
And I went to a water distribution site, which is a real lifeline here these days, and you just see these long lines where people are getting two types of water. You got drinking water in bottles, and then you see the huge tanks, and that's non-potable water. That's there just so people can flush their toilets. And by the way, we met a woman there who's a new mom.
You have to go through this with a one-month-old infant?
Yes.
How much tougher has that made it?
Woo, rough. You know, they got to have that water.
She has a one-month-old at home, and she's going through this.
Wait, and so just so I get a sense of whether it's the amount of water or, like, the quality of water, you turn on a faucet there in one of these homes. What comes out of it?
So it depends on where you are in Jackson. The further away from the water treatment plant, the less water pressure you have. That's basically the simplest way to put it. South Jackson has really been impacted here. Over there, up until the past 24 hours, they turned the faucet on and nothing would come out.
You see, so it's still low pressure. It'll do this all day. And then when you try and turn on the kitchen, it won't work. So we'll have to bring a bucket and get the water from right there for the whole house.
Now they're starting to get some water flowing with some pressure. But back at that water treatment plant, they're just dealing with poor infrastructure, an outdated system over there.
PSI Wednesday was between 50 and 55. The goal is around 90 PSI. The city.
Not to get too scientific here, but before those winter storms came in and really crippled the whole system, they were operating at about 90 PSI.
We've been opening up fire hydrants, trying to release air out of the system in efforts to help push water.
Those storms knocked it way down, so they've been fighting to get back up into the 60s, and then just recently, they got up to 80.
Water pressure dropped across the city Wednesday. The public works director says screens that bring raw water in from the reservoir to the Opie Curtis treatment plant stopped functioning after debris such as fish, clams, and tree branches clogged up the screens.
But then some debris came in and actually jammed up some of the filtration screens at the treatment plant. So guess what? They had to shut it down all over again. So just when people were starting to get some water back, the system went right back down. There's no definitive timeline yet, but they're really hopeful that by the end of this weekend, most people will have water back. But keep in mind, they're still under a boiled water advisory. So we're not talking about drinking water here. This is just running water, period.
Well, so then, I mean, the next question's got to be, why is it taking so long, Victor? Like, I get it. There were power outages. Sometimes you got to shut down water treatment plants because there's no power. Like, we can talk about whether they should have been more prepared for colder temperatures, but I'm sorry, how long does it take to get the water up and running once the power's back on?
They didn't go in to fix the system, you know, so we don't know where our money going.
That's the same question that everyone here is asking, too, and they want people to be held accountable.
But is there anything more that leaders like yourself could have done to keep this water emergency from lasting 2 weeks?
Yeah, if we had about, you know, $100 million or so to invest in the upgrades that are necessary.
I mentioned the outdated system and the weak infrastructure. That seems to be the real problem here. And now the mayor is asking for $47 million from the state and federal government to fix this broken water system.
We might get out of this, and 2 weeks from now, we might have a different issue. Last year, we're dealing with a flood. Right?
But the public works director saying they need $2 billion to upgrade the entire infrastructure.
All right, that is Victor Oquendo there in Jackson, Mississippi. Thanks, Victor.
You got it, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, I thought everyone liked Oprah. Why, what would usually be a fluff interview has become a battle royal. That's on the other side of the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
It happens almost like clockwork. Anyone in the British royal family does literally anything, and your Twitter feed is suddenly full of people with opinions about a monarchy thousands of miles away. At least, they all used to live thousands of miles away. Now, Harry and Meghan live on the American West Coast. That's not the only reason the chatter is hitting a fever pitch this week. It now appears that Buckingham Palace is opening up an actual investigation into Meghan Markle's time in Britain. So, let's bring in an actual British person. We got ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman. He covers wars, diplomacy. When he's really lucky, James, you cover some royals dramas. So what am I missing here? Like, why is everyone so cranky at these people who I would think would have zero impact on our daily lives here?
An actual Brit. Yes, that's me. Well, look, actually, there is a lot of gossip here. It is a bit tabloid. But actually, there's something a lot more serious. And it's going to the heart, really, of what it means to be royal and our understandings of what that actually means in Britain and what it means to Americans.
Breakaway royals Meghan and Harry, the palace addressing their desires to scale back their roles, now hoping to resolve the matter in just a few days.
When Harry and Meghan decided to step back from the royal family back in January of last year, a lot of people wondered what that would really mean and what was really going on behind the scenes. And well, now we have our answer. They were at war.
Almost unsurvivable. Sounds like there was a breaking point.
Oprah is due to sit down with Harry and Meghan this weekend in their first interview since stepping back.
My biggest concern was history repeating itself.
Promos on this interview have been drip-fed.
I don't know how they could expect that after all of this time, we would still just be silent.
And in this interview, Meghan says, no uncertain terms, that the royal family have been spreading lies about her and Harry. And she says that she no longer fears telling her truth.
And if that comes with risk of losing things, I mean, there's a lot that's been lost already.
And also, it's meant that we've had this back and forth between the palace and this interview.
Buckingham Palace now says it's opening an investigation into bullying allegations against Meghan involving several staffers, many questioning the timing.
Clearly somebody felt it was really important to come forward with this now.
And it feels like once the palace, you know, brought out this decision that they were going to launch this investigation, you then had these promos brought out in response. And there's been this tit for tat between the two groups ever since.
Wait, and I want to hear more about this war. Like, what was actually unfolding behind the scenes here that made the British royal family go at it with some of their own?
Well, there was always an issue. From the very beginning, there seemed to be an issue.
I think that she has been treated as an outsider largely because of her Americanism, the fact that she's a divorcee and the fact that she had a career before. And I think there's been mistrust of somebody new coming in.
In early days, I remember it was like, well, you know, she's having a difficulty fitting in. She's an American. They're finding it difficult.
Not many people have asked if I'm okay, but it's a very real thing to be going through behind the scenes.
And the answer is, would it be fair to say not really? Okay, since really been a struggle.
Yes.
And of course, in this, you had the tremendous difficulty that Meghan particularly faced from the British tabloid press.
I mean, when you look at the kind of comments they've been using to describe her, straight out of Compton.
Kate likes avocados, amazing healthy snack. Meghan likes avocados. There's a piece about how she's literally like a war criminal.
But we also knew that there were issues in the household, in Meghan and Harry's royal household, between her and staff. And there were a number of allegations made about personal secretaries being called at sort of 4 o'clock in the morning, all sorts of issues, you know, people quitting last minute, walking out, not wanting to work with Meghan anymore, her being described as being quite difficult. And all this has come to a head in the latest article by the Times of London.
Unnamed royal sources describing instances of emotional cruelty and manipulation. One former employee saying they had been humiliated by the Duchess.
The institution of royalty in this country is essentially a government department, and it has a human resources department where The personal private secretary was forced to go to HR to say, look, I've got two members of staff here who are terrified of their boss, of Meghan. And there was allegations of crying before meetings with her, of post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, a lot of problems.
If they conclude that there was bullying, that's a disaster in terms of Meghan and Harry. They'll be labelled bullies.
And normally, the royal family, the monarchy, would want to keep this behind closed doors. The idea is don't complain, don't explain. That is the motto of the royal family. But it looks like because Meghan's gone to Oprah, because Meghan and Harry have gone to Oprah, well, Buckingham Palace have gone, you know what? We're going to play this game and we're going to launch an investigation into your bullying. And it just seems a bit dirty.
Right. I was going to say, is it just me, James, as an American? Am I just protective? Or does it seem like Meghan Markle is held, though, to a completely double standard? Like, I'm sorry, like somebody in royalty was tough to work with?
Well, I mean, look, double standard is, I think, one thing that comes to mind. I think especially when you think of someone like Prince Andrew.
In what some are calling an unavoidable move, Prince Andrew taking a break from his royal duties after scrutiny over the interview about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
But you were staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay.
There was no investigation into his alleged misconduct, his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. This is a serious issue that he's facing. Doesn't want to talk to the FBI. Why wasn't there an investigation over that? You know, bullying allegations. There are definitely other members of the royal family who have been accused of that. And I've got to say, this could open a can of worms, because if they're going to go on email hunts, well, yes, Meghan could be guilty of it. But who's to say they won't find emails to other members of the royal family? This is exactly why the royal family doesn't do this, because it doesn't want to open that can of worms. Maybe Meghan's forcing them.
Harry and Meghan issued a statement denying that she had bullied anyone.
The Duchess hitting back, calling the report a smear campaign.
And there are legitimate claims on Meghan's part about how she's been treated over the last couple of years. Absolutely, no one's denying that. And they are a very popular couple in Britain, I have to say. But the optics of this interview are going to look bad if they are seen to be sitting in this sort of beautiful sun-kissed Santa Barbara garden whilst we in Britain, who've just been through an exceptionally cold and bleak COVID winter.
Prince Philip is now entering his third week in the hospital here in London. Obviously, this has been an emotional time for the royal family.
The Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, you know, he is very sick. He's been in the hospital over 2 weeks. He's just had a heart procedure. They sat down with Oprah after he had been admitted to the hospital. It looks in poor taste. Why do this interview if the whole reason for leaving, for stepping back, was that you didn't want any more kind of public interest in your private life? Why do an interview with one of the most famous interviewers on earth?
Right. We mentioned Prince Andrew. I should say he said he had cut off all contact with Jeffrey Epstein when he learned what Epstein was accused of. He's denied any wrongdoing. James Longman, fascinating stuff there in London. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. Used to be humans argued over whether medicine should be tested on animals before humans. Now, the animals are trying to get their vaccines faster. This week, our friends at National Geographic confirmed that several apes at the San Diego Zoo have received COVID-19 vaccine doses. No, these are not doses that would otherwise be used for humans. These have been made specifically by veterinarians for animals.
Animals also get diseases and they need to be protected, just like we do.
But the fact that vets are actually injecting prized animals with an experimental drug shows you how serious the pandemic has been in the zoo world.
A 4-year-old Malayan tiger named Nadia at the Bronx Zoo testing positive for COVID-19.
She got sick and the later other tigers and lions got sick.
Zoo doctors have seen COVID now in tigers, lions, leopards, minks. Vets have seen it in dogs and cats.
Maybe you want to rethink about getting a tongue bath from your dog, like most dog owners do.
But they've been especially concerned by outbreaks among apes. One, because we've seen how easily it spreads among humans, and two, because so many species here are endangered.
So we started seeing a lot of lethargy and then coughing and sniffling.
In January, a troop of 8 gorillas contracted coronavirus at San Diego Safari Park, including a 49-year-old gorilla named Winston. Winston got pneumonia and a heart disease, but he survived.
We felt strongly that we needed to know what was going on, how it was impacting him, so we knew exactly how to treat him.
Which all led the staff to say, experimental or not, we've got to get more apes vaccinated. So, the zoo's orangutans have now gotten the shot, along with some bonobos, which are similar to chimpanzees. They've had no adverse reactions so far, and if it looks effective, veterinarians say the big cats are next. And remember, we used to live in a world where vaccines took years to create. A year into this pandemic, the U.S. has authorized 3 extraordinarily effective vaccines. So many more are in development that the animals are getting impatient. Start Here is produced by David Rhine, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimble, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Susie Liu, Jacqueline Yu, Chris Berry, Carlos Betcher, and Sarah Kolanowski. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.